Greetings, earthly avatars of your Entrassian selves, and welcome to episode 98, which we are calling Prepping for Your Dream Bears. We are recording on February 19th at 9 p.m, and tonight we'll be discussing the hottest, newest PvE deck, the shifts in the Construct meta, or at least what Pentachills is playing in Construct the Gauntlet these days, and we conclude by drafting a pack. With me tonight, as usual, our second co-host is Nicholas Pentachills Podrasky. Pentachills.
Hello.
What is your favorite flavor of cough drop?
Watermelon.
No.
Is that
no.
A real flavor?
Well, watermelon is my favorite flavor of hard candy, and sometimes you get like a lot of like sometimes cough drops come in hard candy flavors. But to answer you seriously and to name drop a brand, Hull's citrus varieties that come in like lemon, lime, and such are easily the best.
But those aren't real cough drops, right?
Yeah, they are.
Are you sure they're not just vitamin C supplements?
I'm pretty sure they're vitamin maybe they are. C supplements.
Yep. That I put in my mouth when I want to cough.
Right, but they're not cough suppressants.
Sure.
I mean, there could be a good placebo effect there.
It has not stopped me from using them to that effect.
The third voice that you've already heard is our very own Technophy. What is your favorite flavor of cough drop?
Honey. Definitely honey.
Hmm. And your preferred brand of tissue?
Preferred brand of tissue. Unused.
That's not a brand. That's a state of being.
That's a brand of me.
Mm-hmm.
What? No, that's... You don't just get to decide something's a brand.
Sure, why not?
That's not how brand... Well, because I didn't get a call vitamin C Hull's cough drop, so you don't get a call... No, whatever.
Not hey, you got a pass, I get a pass.
He didn't get a pass. We took him to task.
I didn't get a pass. You actively didn't give me a pass. Scumbag.
Okay, real question then. What is your favorite drop from the PvE campaign thus far, Technofeam?
Ooh. Definitely, what is it, Lady Devonshire? That card? I really want to build a deck around that one.
Yeah, she's a good one. She's especially good if you are the arena, or no, the Army of Myth deck, and you get her on the first drop. She becomes much more valuable then. Hmm. You don't actually have to play her in your deck at that point.
Actually, I like all the cards. I think that's the only PvE card I extended art.
Well, there should be a couple more that you want to extended art soon. Because our first topic is the hottest, newest, well, maybe not the newest anymore by the time you hear this, but the hottest PvE deck that is currently burning up the auction house, and that is the Dream deck.
Dreams!
Okay, that sounds more like a
nightmare. Why don't you tell us about the Dream deck?
The Dream deck is a deck that runs and functions off of drops from the first dungeon for realsies in the campaign, which is known as the Tranquil Dream. All of the opponents from the first five fights are drops there, including Dream Eagle, Dream Bear, Dream Turtle, Dream Skarn, and the useless one that you're not going to actually run. We won't talk about him. When you combine these drops together with the legendary
Dream
piece
Eagle.
Of... Dream Eagle? Did I say Dream something else?
I don't know now. Sorry. Keep on going.
When you combine these cards with the legendary card from the Tranquil Dream pack, Enter the Dream! You can win on turn one with a stupidly high consistency.
I thought that was Ozawa's dance.
No, that's not Ozawa's dance. The legendary drop is called Enter the Dream. And if you right-click on Enter the Dream, it has a bunch of words on it, and it's called a constant, and none of that is relevant. Once you have the equipment for Enter the Dream, it gains text saying you can discard it to put all of the cards with the word Dream in it in from your crypt into play.
But Pentachills, this doesn't seem very good. Why would all my cards be in the crypt? And how could this 8-drop constant help me win the game on turn 1?
Well, foolish listener, I am here to tell you. All of the equipment for the Dream cards allow you to discard them for various effects. Discarding a card, it can be done at quick action speed and has no cost associated with it.
Or threshold.
So most, or threshold, yet. Hopefully by the time you hear this podcast, that is still true. So what happens is you choose to draw first, Your opponent plays their turn, and on your turn, you discard a bunch of dream cards, discard Enter the Dream, and boom! You've got 10 plus attack on the board on turn 0. Your opponent hasn't even played a shard. And to make up for that, the Dream Eagle... Not to make up for that, but to help boost the power of this, the Dream Eagle, in particular, when you discard it, lets you look at the top 4 cards of your deck, pick one and put it into your hand. And then when it enters play, has the same effect. And the Dream Bear, when it gets discarded, gains you 5 health. And when it enters play, does it again. So even if you don't win on turn 1 or 2, chances are you've filtered through a ton of your deck already. Additionally, you have so much health that most arena opponents can't kill you very quickly. And you can just play out a bunch of draw actions like crazy. Things like Fuel for Fire and Oracle Song, Arcane Focus, just filter through your deck. The deck is supplemented by throwing away the Dream Spider and instead running Dream Dance. This is... I personally feel this is a pretty critical part of the deck.
By throwing away, you mean not playing in a deck, not actually discarding.
Yeah, you don't literally throw it. You don't discard it. You just don't play it in the deck at all. And what you get instead is the ability, the power, the thrill of Dream Dance, which, with its piece of equipment, says that when you play this, you put a card in your crypt on top of your deck, and then all of your... your dream cards in your deck have their power that when they enter play, you draw and discard a card, so you actually get into really crazy combo turns. You can basically play out all of the cards in your deck in 2 or 3 turns and then swing for Hyper Mega Lethal, which is a brand new, recently discovered state of lethal, which is really only available if you're playing this absolutely ridiculous deck.
So we'll post a deck list with the podcast in case people still have not discovered the power of the deck by the time this podcast goes live, which is probably going to be true for a lot of people who are not watching streams and not reading the forums, but are listening to the podcast. It does use all 6 equipment slots. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And it uses, as its main focus, an 8-cost triple wild threshold constant that you don't have any wild shards for in your deck. Yeah. Because you never play it.
So a couple of techniques that Penta mentioned briefly, but I want to make sure to reiterate, is that you usually... This is one of the few decks in which you want to draw consistently on. So if you get the choice between playing or drawing, you choose to draw. And you do much of your actions at the end of your opponent's first turn. So on your first turn, you could potentially swing for lethal or between 8 and 12 damage. So you, on your second turn, can win the game. And minimizes your opponent's ability to respond effectively at all. The Dream Dance card is great because it either allows you to redo your combo by putting the Enter the Dream back on your deck, or if you're having problems finding Enter the Dream, you can Dream Dance a Dream Eagle you've discarded to be able to discard again to look at again at the top 6 cards or 4 cards of your deck.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
There's a couple different variations floating around. I've seen a Mono Sapphire one. The one that I've been playing the most is a Ruby Sapphire one that is kind of it's based off of Ossuary's deck on the forum that runs a lot more card draw than some of the other options. So Fuel for the Fire, as Penta mentioned, as well as Oracle Song and Arcane Focus. That list also has orders. What's the first part of that word? Something orders. Deployment orders.
Deployment orders, yeah.
I don't care for that card because it's such a... You're playing
it's such a win more.
It's either win more or cost 6 to draw 2. So I instead had up my count of the Oracle Song and the Fuel for the Fire from 3 to 4 and then put in 2 Crackling Wits. You also, the champion typically isn't in the shadow because if you have that Enter the Dream in your hand, you can just bury the top 2 cards and get more troops into your crypt.
Yeah, there's a lot of variations. Like, you can basically do whatever you want with the deck. The first time I saw Infamous Neo build a version of it, he was using Oakhenge Ceremony to try to hunt down cards, but it was actually just a little more inconsistent than the Sapphire Ruby version that...
So his build's Wild Sapphire, right?
Was Wild Sapphire. Okay. I mean, there's... You eventually get to a point where you just stop running those kind of builds because it's just a little bit easier to do it with the silliness of of Nin and Fuel the Fire. And like, there's just so much good going on.
Yeah, I completely forgot that Enter the Dream was a wild card at all, because I kept on thinking, man, if I ever get to 8 resources, I'm just going to hard cast this, and I've never been able to hard play the card without I've never been up to 8 resources really with this deck, and so I did not think about the threshold preventing me. Now, I've certainly thought about that, like, about the other cards.
4 resources with this deck? I don't see it going very well past that.
Say that again?
I don't see it going very well past, like, 4 resources.
Well, I've gotten a little bit high, so this deck has higher variance than some of the other more consistent decks, like Slargear Replicator's deck. And so I've lost, I think, 2 or 3 matches where I just never found Interested Dream to be able to put my crypt into play. And I went through about 30 or 40 cards in my deck, and so it was just a unlucky situation.
Every now and then, your 4 of will be buried, not just in the bottom forever of your deck, but also be just magically, grossly never hit by Dream Eagle, Arcane Focus. Yep. Like, just, you'll draw so much of your deck and you won't see it.
I've buried myself twice, kind of for fun, just because I was like, oh, I don't know if this will kill me or not, so let's enter a dream and find out if it does. Yep, it killed me. Because of the Dream Dance, having 2 or 3 triggers on each troop led to bad things happening to my deck.
Yep, that will happen.
Yeah, I don't think with this deck you would be playing more than 1 or 2 Dream Dances if you were actually trying to win.
Oh, what? Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. No, I mean, generally speaking, you play 1.
Yeah.
And you can kill your opponent, like, if you choose to draw first, and the AI will always choose to play first, which is fantastic. You can just quite literally sit there and play out 7 troops on turn 0 and then swing for lethal. That's 1 Enter the Dream. It doesn't need to be anything super ridiculous.
One thing that Coach Fliprong has been testing with just a little bit so far is to replace the deployment orders from Ossuary's deck with Crazed Rummaging. And that's a pretty good inclusion, because when you discard Dreamscarn, it will give you a 1-cost ruby action, and my favorite usually is Crazed Rummaging, often because I'm playing it to try to hopefully draw into the dream, but if I don't, I often end up with more troops in my crypt. So that is a possible addition, just because it fulfills 2 things that you care about. Try and get cards from your deck, and try and put cards into the crypt.
Yeah, it seems fair.
The Skarn itself is fantastic for just giving you 1-cost ruby actions, like Crushing Blow, or Burn, or Burn to the Ground sometimes. Crazed Rummaging. So, and the nice thing about Dream Skarn is that if you haven't read it yet, because you've been slowly going through this and not really paying attention to dream creatures, dream troops, it says it's a 3/3 for 5, double ruby threshold, but that doesn't matter because you are playing it from your crypt most of the time. When you play an action, this deals 1 damage to each opposing troop, which is very similar text to a relatively busted card that they nerfed at one point, the War Machinist, who did something similar, but also did damage to opposing champion. But that's a little bit less relevant here. But the Dream Skarn, yes. Dream Skarn does not need equipment for this effect, but for the other thing he does. And it basically can act as a sort of board wipe, because you could easily play your Crackling Wits if you're playing the Arcane Focus, Fuel for the Fire, or other relatively cheap actions, or the ruby actions it generated when it came into play, or you discarded. Is it only on discard? I think it's only on discard. Yes, it's only on discard. It's a dream cap. So, one of the weird things... Not weird. One of the problems of an inefficient market that is created from being unable to search for these cards on the auction house prior to the most recent patch is that there was a high variability in the price of all these cards. Since you had to go through pages and pages of PvE cards to get to them. And as soon as the server went up from the last patch, the price immediately skyrocketed. It went from about 100 to 200 plat to about 300, then 400, then to 1,000 plat, and then it has collapsed since then. In fact, I'm curious how much Enter the Dream is currently going for.
So it was like 100 and something before we went live. But it's selling like hotcakes. Like
$2.99.
The thing, okay, so it's at 299 now, but it'll go back down and it'll fluctuate, it'll bounce around, and it'll do all sorts of stuff. The thing about the deck that it offers that a lot of other decks don't offer, and this is actually super important. You should probably, if you're just listening to this podcast and you're an experienced super mega ultra player, you probably know this already. The deck is silly fun. It is the most fun I've had in the arena in a long time because it's a mechanic that we just don't have access to anywhere else in Hex right now. The idea of discarding troops for benefit. And not that we don't have any literal access to that, but we have very little. So, but additionally, it is 100% farmable in PvE. The chance of getting an Enter the Dream to drop is actually fairly low from what people have been saying. I've heard reports around 5%. I watched Infamous Neo farm the thing and get his first Enter the Dream after like 15, 20 packs. It is fairly low. But a free-to-play player can absolutely get this deck, absolutely make it work, and with almost no problems, I imagine, get it running in the arena. Not quite as good in the campaign, admittedly, but still pretty sweet.
Yeah, the campaign really limits running this type of deck because of all the card restrictions. But so, with this deck available now, and kind of its mechanics spoiled, do you think this is the top deck for farming arena?
No. The Slaughter Gear deck, or decks, are much faster, and an Orc aggro deck is probably faster, just because it's less button clicks, yep. And it's less... Discarding a card requires you right-click on the card, click discard the card, as opposed to just playing troop and dragging troop to crypt. Or not dragging troop to crypt. You know, pass priority to attack, attack with all spacebar. Pass priority to attack, attack with... You know, that's how you play the faster decks.
And then perhaps having to go through your deck with the eagle. There's just a lot of things. It kills your opponent much quicker in terms of the amount of turns, because you could do it on turn... one somewhat rarely, but decent probability, and turn two and three almost very highly likely, but those turns just take longer to play. And Slaughter Gear, who can kill on turn four or five ish very consistently, but those turns are really quick.
Assuming you farm it on your own, like if you farm 10 packs of the Tranquil Dream, you'll get a couple of the pieces of equipment, you'll get 10 cards for the deck. You can get Dream Spider. And I will admit that Dream Spider often doesn't find a place in the deck, but you can certainly run it with it. The whole deck costs less than you're probably going to be able to sell the rest of the Chafe cards you've picked up for, honestly. Like, you'll have things... you'll have some PvP cards that you'll probably be able to throw away for a couple of plat each, and that'll get you another piece of equipment, and you might double down on a piece of equipment, and I mean, there's just so much there for you to get, hilariously, that the whole deck costs as much as one replicator, right?
Yep.
That's the thing. The Replicator's Gambit, or Replicator's Gambit, the Replicator's deck, 100% faster. Not in terms of actual speed, but just, it's definitely faster. But what does that matter when you're talking about a deck that is just, like, so silly easy to farm? You could not tell me that a free-to-play player couldn't get it in 2 or 3 days of trying.
So I got my first Enter the Dream probably after grinding the dungeon 4 times, but that's also after I played it 3 times on 3 different characters, so I guess it took me 10 packs to get my first legendary, which is higher than what most people report, but of course there's a lot of variation in that. The big thing about this deck of note is that the Enter the Dream will, in the long run, keep going down in price. It'll find some equilibrium, but it's not going to be one that will be consistently high. It's already low right now.
You have to go through the dungeon to progress in the campaign. Yeah.
The Replicator, Slaughter Gear Replicator, is much harder to get because it comes from a chest roll, and so those
and
are
people will
scarce.
Eventually stop rolling those chests.
Yeah, so it's going to get more expensive over time, not less.
And the chances of getting the if you have an equal number of Tranquil Dream packs and an equal number of set 3 packs and infinite gold, it is still easier to farm the to get enter the dreams than it is to get replicators. Replicators are so ridiculously, absurdly uncommon from the packs that they are native to that it's almost embarrassing. Like, it's a point of contention. I bring it up on my stream all the time, and people tell me they like the way it is or they hate the way it is. But I have rolled, like, 300-400 set 3 chests, and I have 2 replicators and 2 reavers, which are the chase rare and legendary from set 3 rolls. And I don't... Like, you can call that chase? That's like opening packs and hunting for something that's a 1 in 80 chance. Like, it's so ridiculously hard to farm that it's frustrating, if anything. I mean, I've heard stories of people getting, like, 2 in 10 and stuff like that, but it's not like that happens often.
Yeah, as you know, I got all my replicators from rolling, but I've rolled a ton of chests, several hundred. I'm not sure if I've rolled more or less than you have, and I've only gotten 2 reavers, which seems odd because I've gotten 4 of the legendary and only 2 of the rare. So the replicator deck I run is a Mono Sapphire one because I only have 2 reavers to go on. That's fine. The Mono Sapphire one is extremely consistent. It's a little bit slower than the Ruby Sapphire one, but not by much.
It's still the fastest deck in spades, right? To the point where you almost expect it to get nerfed. But the replicator's deck I see getting nerfed only on the off chance that, like, they increase the drop chances of it, because quite frankly, people just don't have access to that kind of card. On the auction house, replicators are still, I think, close to $30, which is absurd for a PvE card.
Yep.
And I mean, that's the way Corey Jones has always wanted it, right? Like, he wanted super chase cards, and I can respect.
So I
that,
think you want super chase cards from the campaign, not something that is behind the PvP wall.
Yeah, I have to wonder, because
so what do you guys think?
I mean,
about that?
The gold intake just isn't high enough in the game.
Yeah, so what do you guys think about that? When a card like Slaughter Gear is so expensive, and now that we have another card like Enter the Dream, should be dropping in the next coming months or year. And they're all PvE. It's all just gaining more stuff.
What? Like, what do I think about that? It's great. PvE players have options. That's awesome.
I mean, in some ways it should reduce the pressure of the price on the Slaughter Gear's deck, just because there's alternatives for people that are cheaper, so the demand should go down for Slaughter Gear. But it's so rare.
Cheaper, and I feel like
so rare that's going to be hard for that to be something that's observable. Because, sure, for maybe 5 people who want the deck, maybe 2 decide not to buy it anymore. But there's still 3 people who want a card that there's not 3 playsets of for every set of 5 people or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like if you want to play the Stormcloud Arena deck, honestly. That's a whole different beast of burden, really, because it's those cards are in finite existence, and they will be for a very, very long time, right? Like, no more Storm Kings or Storms of the Century are, as far as we know, ever going to come into the market, so it's very difficult to look at that kind of deck and expect the price to come down, even though the Stormcloud deck is nowhere near as efficient as either Enter the Dream nor Slaughter Gears, yeah. And I mean, that's fine, because there's varying degrees of playability and there's varying degrees of fun. There are going to be people who enjoy one playstyle over the other. I'm probably not going to play the Slaughter Gear deck for a while, because the Enter the Dream deck is a little bit slower, a little bit less consistent. I would actually say it's probably about as consistent if you're okay with your mulligans. You can get absolutely hosed and have to mult a 2 before you see any of the cards necessary, but I mean, that's not a very high chance, honestly, because your deck is almost all good stuff.
That's something we didn't mention, is that you usually want to mull into an Eagle or Enter the Dream if possible.
Yeah. And this is like word verbatim from somebody's forum post, and I'm sorry that I don't remember who's Ossuary Hex. Okay. Ossuary! Hopefully he's listening, because he'll understand why I just did that.
That's good, because I don't.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. You draw first. You let your opponent play first in every situation, which is the single hardest part about playing the deck.
I make that mistake so often.
Because your mind is just accustomed to seeing the button and going, oh, yeah, play first. Ah, oh, shoot, is how that goes. And then you need to not keep a hand that looks okay. You need to keep a hand that has a Dream Eagle or Enter the Dream and a couple of Dream cards, or like you need to keep something that you can see the gas for, and you're probably going to have to play the deck 3 or 4 times before you're like, oh, I see what I'm looking for here. But yeah, it's not the hardest deck to play.
So you guys brought up an interesting concept, right? Set 3 had Rolling the Chest, got Slaughter Gears. Adventure Zone 1 got the Dream Deck. So should we be expecting something coming out of set 4?
It looks like they are partly making the dungeons have theme drops that you want to include in the same deck. So there's probably a Devonshire deck out there that's
kind
makeable
of?
At some level.
Yeah, if you just look at the drops from the other dungeons, they aren't as cohesive as the Dream.
But there's
ones.
Obviously the a Recruiter deck too. It's just not all self-contained within those dungeons. So I think there's certainly that they're making drops to try to inspire you to build certain kinds of decks that are fun, fast, efficient. But this power level is ridiculous.
it's really hard to explain without giving you a visual representation of it. Like we're sitting here being like, oh, this deck is so cool and amazing. And I know if Tecmofee hasn't even played it or seen it, so it's hard for him to even...
Yeah, I've seen it. I just was wondering which one are you running, because there's some slight...
It doesn't matter. You just run... They have to have the pieces of equipment that allow you to discard them. That's
true. But there are some of them I see that are easier to run than others.
Sure.
Anyway, it's a super fun deck. If you're a free-to-play player, but you're like, well, I want a deck to grind the arena and I've got $10 or $20, like, I think $20 is the top end of buying into this deck. You could almost certainly purchase the whole deck for less than $10, I think. The 4, 8, 12, 16 at... So about $320 for the Dream cards themselves. Enter the Dream at $2 a pop. I'm guessing it'll come down to at least $2 a pop. Okay, so it'll be a little over 10. But I'm willing to wager you could get it for 15 under from this point in Hex's career onwards, or you could just farm it in the Tranquil Dream.
The most expensive troop is the Skarn. Last I saw it was around 40-50 platinum, which is not bad for rare.
It's actually not going to sit there for long, because once the free-to-play players start saying, like the true free-to-play players, the ones who are never going to put money into the game, see this, they're going to realize that this is the way to do it, and they're going to start undercutting each other point by point by point, and those are going to come down to 20 cents each.
No, I even think F40 is not that bad, but it should come down farther.
Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of deck you would buy into other TCGs just happily. You would walk into the card shop, it would be boxed up, it would say $10. They should sell it in the Hex store. They should sell it in the Hex store for $10. Except that would hurt the free-to-play players' ability to sell the cards, I guess. Obviously they don't want to
do that. I don't think they'll ever sell PvE cards.
They're probably never going to sell another new, starter deck.
I have to check the equipment. The staff's been sticking around 75 to 80 platinum, and that will come down as well, because you only need one of those, even though it's legendary.
Yeah, and it has a higher drop rate out of the chest, because you're getting two pieces of equipment, than the Enter the Dreams itself, so you will find one of those before you find anything else. Additionally, there are going to be players who have the deck and are farming these cards because they're probably the most sellable PvE item in the game right now. Which is actually another interesting note. Sarthu is the legendary Sapphire Dragon from the PvE Adventure Zone 1 packs. Adventure Zone 1 packs are limited in quantity to what you can get in a character. Sure, you can just keep making new and new characters, but they're harder to come by than the Tranquil Dream packs, in theory. You probably get two or three Adventure Zone 1 packs on a character before for every one Tranquil Dream pack you get? Well, no. Yeah, it depends on how you do it. But it's probably easier to farm Adventure Zone 1 packs. But the pool of cards you can get is higher. And Sarthu's sitting at like $3 or $4 right now. Do you have the auction house open,
no,
Mike?
No,
no. Okay. Well, it was fairly high for a PvE card. The thing is, I don't know if many of them are selling because there's not a whole lot of decks that slap a Sarthu in it. There's no arena deck running it. Or there's no serious speed clear arena deck running it. And more so than that, it's actually a legendary. So you only ever need one in the campaign at the moment. Two tops for certain races, I guess. And yeah, apparently it's at $1 as of right now, but I can't imagine it selling very much comparatively to just farming Tranquil Dream cards. You get to sell every dream card you get that's not a spider.
Yeah, and probably some spiders because it's going to be an okay filler card for a short term.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm curious. Hexprice.com is a great place for all this information. It's just Dream Spider, right?
Hexprice.com.
I'm curious if any spiders have sold since this deck has gone live. It's going. 64 sales yesterday.
Yeah,
or 45 yesterday.
That's still really good. The dream Igla is probably the king seller, if anything, because you can run the deck on 2 to 3 Enter the Dreams. You want 4 Dream Eagles. You just absolutely want 4 Dream Eagles. Apparently 90 sales overall.
Yeah, I was wrong. It was 15 sales yesterday for the Spire, but 45 for the last 7 days.
Fair enough. Fair dues.
So how many for Eagle?
Bad dues. Overall 90. 90 sales, but the Auction House has only been working for a day.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because we actually got a massive patch on Tuesday. And that's a thing that's not the Dream Deck that we can talk about. Yay, patch on Tuesday.
What? Why would we do that?
I mean, because some cool stuff happened.
Really?
We got Hearthstone Shakes.
Isn't that that Aeronet meme where the music stops and... Oh, no, wait, that's
a Harlem
different shake. Okay.
Yeah. I see what you did there. So once again, the patch happened on Tuesday, so if you haven't figured it out by now, all of our patches happen on Tuesday, which is kind of cool. There were some pretty significant changes to the game, and, well, not like core changes to the game, but some changes to quality of life and just overall polish of the game. Generally speaking, it was a positive patch. A couple of things have flipped upside down since then. The patch notes are so hard to find for Hex. It's very frustrating. If you're not following them on Twitter or have the site where they update all of the patch notes, they don't even put them on the main page anymore, I don't think. Which is...
So all the patch notes tend to go to one URL that they just consistently update. It should be on the main page. Yeah, Chronicles of Entrath update 2.18.16. Actually, they made their own page. No, I'm wrong. You're right. That was just the announcement for it. But they have the consistent patch page just because they want everyone to get the same page for it. And hopefully...
Which is cool and all, but you good luck finding it if you're a new player and you don't follow them on Twitter, which up until I started streaming, I didn't never use Twitter. So.
hexcccg.com/patch-notes/en-us/client-patch-note/. It's not the easiest URL to remember, but it's a stack one for all patch notes.
So if any listeners out there...
Do you want to link that up in Skype real quick so that I can click on it? Because have forgotten.
Yeah, so if any listener out there actually types in that according to what Zubrin said, I want to hear about it, because I'm betting it's going to be zero people.
I mean, I was saying it just mostly for the effect of it being, you're such a ruiner of fun. Go listen to your show, Pan.
He's literally just here to sit in the background and occasionally throw shade. The Terms of Service checkbox now remembers your check is the first thing on the update, but that was actually fixed a while ago. First of all, I think that this is not the PvE update that they talked about. This is a bug fix patch, which they called a hot fix, which is cool. It fixed a couple of card arts. It did some things to models. It made things better just visually along the board. One of the big contentious things, like I mentioned before, is we now have a Hearthstone Shake. Anytime you deal between zero and infinity damage to your opponent... Well, actually, it's between negative infinity and positive infinity, I suppose. You will get a little screen shake, which has no option of being turned off. Because it just doesn't yet. I love it. I think it's hilarious. But some people are sick of it already. I don't know. It's kind of really hard to explain. You have to, like, open up the game and play it to see it, but... You know, it's just like, psh, a little bit of shake. But it's kind of funny because it has the same intensity no matter how much damage you deal. And like I mentioned, you can swing with a battle hopper, a 0-1 battle hopper, and get screen shake. And it's just kind of...
So there's already a complaint on it, on rhythm. So...
Yes, the within an hour of the patch being live, there was a complaint on Reddit. It was one of our finest Reddit moments as a game with a Reddit. Screenshake needs to go. Posted by Nate's Gross Teeth. It was up there super fast. Really, all they have to do is include an option to turn it off. I cannot imagine that's not going to be a thing after people have mentioned
right.
it. There are new lines and for attacking and blocking and damages and charge powers, and that's pretty cool. A lot of the hint screens were fixed and not pointing in the wrong spot now.
P, were you going to say something about the shake?
Well, if Penta's done, I mean, he's still going.
Go ahead.
No, sure.
I'm sorry, I didn't. Okay, no. So you can...
P.
So, an interesting point about the screen shake. Hex TCG isn't really a graphical-heavy game, but there are no graphical options, really, other than screen resolution.
Yeah, I have to imagine those are coming at some point, right? Because they're going to put the game on tablets.
Or you just have a completely separate graphical version for tablets.
Sure.
But it's like things like screen shake, some other effects and things like fog, minor things like that could improve somebody with a crappy computer's user experience.
Yeah, it should probably come around.
Especially considering it's a Unity engine, and yeah. From what I know, that's more not too bad on modifying and having custom graphic options.
Okay. I know very little about the Unity engine, so that would be... I mean, I guess that makes sense, because it's supposed to be extremely friendly to porting to other systems, and so being able to change the graphics with ease would probably be one of the features that enable you to do that.
Yeah. Some of the other cool highlights I can think of... It now just, when you are choosing to keep or mulligan, it tells you what your opponent chose to do if they won the coin flip. It tells you whether they chose to play or draw. So that's interesting. It's currently bugged, where if you win the coin flip, it will always tell you that your opponent chose to play, which is kind of counterintuitive because that's wrong. But, you know, that being there as a message is a good sign, and hopefully once that's all good and running, I mean, that's fine. Shift keywords got a little bit of a nice change. Promo cards, and this is kind of a big deal, promo cards don't have... This kind of happened in the last patch, but they included it here. No longer have a special yellow coloring as a rarity indicator. They now have whatever their normal card's rarity is and a tiny little bit of PvE flare next to them. Just kind of neat, I guess. I think that's it. There was a couple of changes to the campaign, balance changes. The Shinhair starter deck, I complained about this on the podcast, so I'm going to point this out. The Shinhair starter deck is now not the most toxic thing I have ever played on the planet. They have added a couple of Shroom Tanks and Bucktooth Commanders to the deck, and replaced a couple of other janky decks, and it is not trash. Existing players will not get those cards, and it is just much, much nicer.
Okay.
A couple of cards are dropping that weren't dropping before.
So with the Shinhair deck improved, what is the worst PvE deck now? Or starter deck?
The one I've heard the most complaints about in stream chats, which is all I can really go on, is the Venon deck, funny enough. I thought the Venon deck was crazy fun and good, but I guess from a new player perspective, it might not be the most intuitive deck.
I haven't played it, so I have no idea. Why is it intuitive? Is it...
Well, because you win through spiders, okay, as opposed to winning through... Like, every other race wins through damage, whereas spiders win through spider damage, which is a very different type of damage.
Spider damage.
Does whatever damage spiders damage.
But that's the Venon mechanic. There's not too much else to it.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that it's not worse or... Like, because some of the intro spider-creating cards aren't that great either, so I can see it. Yeah. The Chained Goliath fight apparently got changed. I honestly have no idea.
I heard speculation that people expected that maybe the fight's a little bit better explained. I have no reason why that might be true, but I know people complained about it. I have not replayed it since the patch went live, though. I don't think I have. You know, actually, I might have played it last night, but I was in such a fog that I don't remember if I did or not, or if there was anything different about it.
It's kind of irrelevant. There were a couple of gameplay fixes. Probably the most notable for me is Uzume is not working. I have been playing a Shinhair through the campaign, so having all my Uzumes do absolutely nothing was kind of silly. All of the alternate art cards that were missing their faction now have those factions added. That's good. So those are relevant for the 2 or 3 or 4 faction-related cards.
There's also just random ones that are missing it, like Spearcliff Cloud Knight. I was using that in my cleric deck that had the Ardent Recruiter in there and was not getting the reductions. Like, oh, that's weird. I guess that's factionless, but it was just a bug or database entry error.
Probably the biggest bug fix in the entire patch, and I know you'll both agree with me on this one, is once you select sleeves, they persist through games 1, 2, and 3 of
the match. That's actually really good. That was always one that annoyed me.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that. I played the draft the other day and was very...
I am not 100% certain that that is accurate. To be honest with you, it is in the patch notes. I haven't paid enough attention to know whether... Actually, you know, I have played probably 10 matches today, and I think they all had my sleeves on. But this patch did reintroduce the single most frustrating bug that I can
think of. You can't counter Angel?
No, you actually can still counter Angel.
You sure?
Yes, I countered one today. It was a... Sometimes looking at priority or when a card flips over or something happens, you end up with sleeves of your... a basic shard from your deck on the top of your deck, and you are no longer able to see the top card of your deck if you have a card that allows you to see the top card of your deck. And additionally, you just have an ugly shard sitting there and staring at you and looking like it can be clicked on, and it's really dumb, and hopefully they fix that. I expect a hotfix to this hotfix next week. Maybe it will come, maybe it won't, but...
It's kind of important for the 100K tournament, since that might be something that affects how people do.
I mean, that's getting real close, which is, like, 3 weeks?
Two weeks from now.
It is two weeks from now. And it is... I have to imagine that at this point, they have already locked down a recent stable client, and they're going with that, and no changes being... Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's no screen shake in whatever version they play on.
Are we sure that they're going to have a localized version? I know they're capable of it from
Gen Con. No, I'm not sure about anything. I don't work for them, but I'm guessing that would be the most intelligent way to do it, right?
Maybe. The problem, of course, is that there would be untested bugs potentially in the client that will only crop up during the tournament. Well,
I mean, that's like my biggest fear. Right. I've actually been having... So the biggest and most annoying bug in the game to me personally, having been playing nothing but Constructed Gauntlet and Campaign recently, is that if I disconnect during a Constructed Gauntlet for any reason, including priority gets stuck and I have to... I have to restart to force priority through, I am no longer able to use the reserves of my deck and change my deck between games 1 and 2, which I think is probably a byproduct of the way the game used to handle Constructed Gauntlet in it being best of 1s.
Well, if your reserves were that good, they'd be in the main deck anyway, so I'm sure you were fine.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's great leaving my Frost Wizards in the reserves against Winter Moon players. And the problem with it is that Winter Moon cards, like Arcane Focus and Oracle Song and Peak, are specifically triggering it, so it's been really frustrating.
Yeah.
That bug has just been gnawing away at me, and I hope something like that does not happen at the 100K, because it would be... I can't for the life of me imagine players having fun if that was going on. Just like, oh yeah, I can use my reserves during this event for 40K.
Of note, this podcast title was almost titled 2 Weeks, but the song that's named 2 Weeks I'm not overly familiar with, and so I took a pass on that, and we'll save it for next week when we call the podcast 1 Week. Are you okay?
Did you know that it's been 1 week since you looked at me?
I did not know that.
Did you cock your head to the side and say you were angry?
Maybe.
It's been 5 days since you laughed at me, saying get back together, come back and see me? Yeah.
Wow. Maybe we'll have a different title for next week.
Yeah. Don't
3 days since the living room. I really was, it's all my fault, but couldn't tell you. Yesterday you'd forgiven me, but it'll still be 2 days till I say I'm sorry.
Penta, going through the patch notes, I noticed that you didn't mention the escalation one.
Escalation cards got text changed. Nothing changed on them. Their text got changed.
But that does allow for escalation mechanics in the future to be more modular.
How so?
Yeah, no, because that's the way they changed them from the way they used to work to the way that they are currently looking to work. The wording was just wrong. Most of the wording changes on cards didn't actually affect anything.
Right, but what do you think, what option do you think it opens up, P?
Future cards can have a escalation mechanic where its starting effect is higher, but it's it doesn't double, so it just adds a random number.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm not sure if the text is explanatory or if the text is part of the keyword of what escalation is.
It's
escalation, colon, number.
Right.
And then the effect that the action takes.
Yeah, but escalation has a toolbar next to the card when you're playing. I would have to pull an escalation card up in an actual match to see that. So I can't really... Let's assume that it expands the variety of escalation cards. That's sweet. I don't think we're getting escalation cards out of PvE for 10 million years. And
Sapphire still needs the escalation. Draw one card. Escalate one. For two.
Yeah, I mean, we need a whole lot of things, really. Sapphire of all things right now needs to be really careful of what it gets, because holy crack, Winter Moon is oppressive right now.
Oh, just play aggro. But, it won't be that bad.
Yeah, just run baby 80s.
Don't do that.
I feel super bad for this person I'm playing against.
So, patch notes. Oh, one other thing that's not mentioned in patch notes, I don't think, but I noticed pretty quickly, is that the charge power's got slightly different coloration on it.
Yeah, and you now actually have like a direct line to your opponent's health when you're attacking, and there's all sorts of weird little shifting.
Well, like, I didn't even notice that the charge powers in PvE had different icons until this patch, and it's like, oh, the cleric has a little light thing going on there as opposed to the normal coinish looking thing that you use in PvP. That's neat. Never noticed that before.
There's a couple more things we need to get back in line with the way things used to be. I really think we need to get hold priority back, which is I'm not sure if they've ever expanded on whether or not that's coming back.
Keep
I
think dreaming.
They might have. Like, it was definitely, it was an intentional removal from the client at the time, but I can hold out hope that it returns. Charge powers in general need some sort, like, I think you can respond to some of them, you can't respond to others. And, probably the most relevant thing we need a change to is, what was it that I ran into the other day? I had a brown fox scout on the top of my deck that I wanted to play during my ready phase, and you can do that. That is a legal play in Hex TCG, but my opponent had a start of turn trigger, and because my opponent had a start of turn trigger that doesn't go on the chain, I didn't get to play, like, it went right to my draw. It did their triggers, and then I drew a card. And so I didn't get to play my brown fox scout, which is just, like, a straight bug, if you ask me. But it was, oh. That little tiny things like that need to be adjusted. But this patch was still a huge step in a good direction.
Sure.
Polish. I kind of glossed over everything in here, but the Hearthstone Shake is a huge deal.
That and sleeves. Yes. So let's get into our second topic of essence or of substance. Though I should mention the other thing that's neat about the Dream Deck is playing Nin, having 23 health, helps with things like Paladin again.
That's true.
Because I'm so used to playing Bertram at 2 health deficit, and it's just like, I need damage on the board as soon as possible, otherwise things are going to get out of hand, and racing that becomes less of an issue. Though I still have died to him with the Dream Deck. Regardless, I don't know if Zarlox is easier with the Dream Deck than it is with Slaughter Gear. It might be. The other topic of substance is that we are 2 weeks away from the 100K tournament, and Constructive has been active, at least in Gauntlet. People are playing in Gauntlets, the queues are firing, and that's partly because we have some streamers who are actively hitting the queues quite often. Penta's one of them, Jeff Hoogland's another one who's been doing it quite a bit, and so other players have been also participating, trying to grind that EV or just get more practice in the game itself. So Penta, what have you been seeing so far?
Also, shout outs to the Motivation, who is also streaming Constructed. Not just because I had seen it and you haven't. Okay. I have been seeing... Oh, man, that is... That's an interesting question, because I've been seeing a mishmash of a lot of things. I have seen a plethora of Wintermoon. Wintermoon is, without any doubt, the thing I have seen the most of, and likely I will continue to see the most of. It is a powerful meta deck, and it is both fun to play, annoying to play against, which is what any good TCG deck is, and also fairly cheap.
So why is it popular?
It's popular for a couple of reasons. It's a winning deck on Hex meta before even the Constructed Gauntlet started picking up some pace. But as well, Jeff Hoogland got into the game, he picked it up, any new Magic players are going to come and see the number one player on the Star City Games Pro Tour playing a deck and go, well, that deck's probably pretty good, and they wouldn't be wrong. It's a control deck, which...
veteran players like to play?
Veteran players like to play control decks, especially early on in a TCG's existence like this, where they are just notably better than they are going to be later on. Like I said, fun to play, annoying to play against, and those are every piece that you want. Additionally, the champion power. Once you get a Wintermoon train going, there's not much in the game that is as fun as playing out your turn, dropping your hand of seven, like, six cards down as you, like, play literally everything out. Going to the opponent's turn, having seven cards in your hand again because most of the cards you played drew you other cards, having your resources replenish, and holding three counter magics in your hand while you peer over your cards and just giggle to yourself waiting for your opponent to play a card. Like, hee-hee-hee, what are you going to play? Ha-ha-ha, scrub.
So, of note, the last week, that's on Hex meta right now, we've had 3 days with at least 17 Gauntlet 5X decks, and that's higher than the how many decks were appearing in early January when IQs were still involved with it. So the EV was much higher in January than it is right now, but people are playing a lot more Constructed Gauntlet presently. That's, I'm hoping, is a symptom both of interest generated by streamers, but also just more players in the game who want to play.
What's also the most, now that a lot of people have filled out their collections, it's the most just consistent way to get EV. It's not the best EV, but, I mean, it really is just kind of run it in and have fun.
And it's play on demand as opposed to having carve out four consistent hours.
I also like to think that the Five Shards tournaments, which have been picking up, like, we get a lot of viewers when we're shoutcasting those, and the casting coliseum has been going on, and there's just been stuff going on which kind of brings people to that. And it's been fun. Other stuff I've been seeing in there, other than Winter Moon, a lot of blood, a lot of blood that, a little bit of Benvolio decks, a little bit of the Diamond Wild, Sado Lucian style decks, a couple of weird Tri-Shard Winter Moon variants. I was able to take a Wild Ruby deck to 4-1 today before getting basically stream sniped by Jadeem Jedi out of my tournament. I hope he listens to this. If he doesn't listen to this, don't throw shade at him. He wasn't really stream sniping me.
So actually,
yes,
a quick one on Hex Meta. The only person that seems to be getting 5x with the Tri-Shard Winter Moon deck,
Coyotalist, is Jeff Hoodwind.
I don't see anybody else.
He has started playing the deck 3 days ago, and it is not an easy deck to play. And as he slowly improves it, people are basically playing a version or two behind him at any given point. And
but we did see. I thought we did see one during.
It came out during the Cup.
Yeah, it was when it first made an appearance.
Yeah.
But it did not win the Cup, and a couple of our teammates played it during the Cup, but it did not get a lot of press, I don't think. I mean, we saw it on stream, but...
like, two or three times. It didn't do the stuff that it needed to do during those... during the Ruby
and
Cup.
And the deck's gotten better in the last week alone. I mean, there was a new... two new cards added today alone, I think, based on the team chat discussion.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's changing all the time. The win condition is changing. Like, go and look on it on Hex Meta. You'll watch the evolution of the deck. It's really, really fun. And if you haven't, go watch Jeff Hoogland's stream with the deck, because it's also really good to watch. I've been seeing... one of my personal favorites is Metronomy, is running a Thunderfield Elder Mastery of Time deck. The only action in his entire deck is Mastery of Time. He has Azurfate Sorcerai socketed with the Major Sapphire of Mind and the Minor Wild Orb of Conservation, so Spell Shield, draw card on damage. Troops that benefit from that, all the flight troops like Indigo Dreamwalker, it's got Reese's in there. And it's just, it's so crazy how versatile it is in going either wide or tall, that it's a really cool deck. Huge props to Metronomy for that.
When you're streaming, do people join the queue to participate in stream?
Not often. It has happened.
Okay.
Like I said earlier today, the only reason I got paired up against Jadeem Jedi is he knew I was looking for a match and paired himself against me. He also knew that the deck he was running at the time was a straight hard counter to the one I was playing, so it was... He queued up for reasons, he said. But basically, he got a pack and kept my deck from going 5x.
You sound bitter.
I was having a pretty salty day. I had to... I'm going to throw some shade at Havoc, who is the only person I know who dual queues in the gauntlet. And I had to fight Havoc's alt account. And when the game finished, I was up like 20 minutes on time. And it's very unhappy playing a game on stream when your opponent basically isn't playing the game half of the time. So I was already in a little bit of a salty mood, yeah.
Okay. So,
JJ took advantage of my emotional being.
How long are you waiting in queue to play games?
Between instant and I have waited as long as 15 minutes, I suppose. But I very rarely am waiting more than 5 minutes. Okay.
That's a lot better than it used to be.
It's getting better. It's also kind of dependent on the time of the day. There's a 5-0 Shinhair starter deck up on Hex Meta.
The Wildblood Magic player.
Yeah, Andrew. Yeah, it's not a straight Shinhair starter deck, but it might as well be. And it's also not running a 15 card reserves, which is also funny. Neat. Go play more Constructed Gauntlet. It's good EV. You only have to go 3 games to break even. And honestly, Constructed is a really fun part of the game that a lot of people ignore.
What about that one deck that you were forced to play because it was revived from a lost gauntlet from months ago?
Oh yeah.
Tell us about that. What were you thinking when you put that together?
I've run so much Jan. I can't even pull that deck up because it doesn't exist in my deck list. So I'm having I don't even know what to tell you. It was a Blood Sapphire list that plays around with the idea of gaining a lot of charges, so I had Crackling Wit and Crackling Rod in there, Cerulean Mirror Knights, and Storm Clouds, which has been a pet idea that I've tried to make work in so many different forms. Eternal Drifter was in there because I was gaining a lot of charges, and I thought, oh, I might as well have a big artifact troop in there. Monsoon to get the Storm Clouds back, or the Stormlings back. By the looks of it, it was a set 2 constructed deck.
That's why I was kind of amused by it, because you actually were doing okay with it.
The deck was good. The card quality was average. But the problem was that I was playing a blood deck without vampires and vampires. So I was kind of just hurting myself.
So with such a powerful card of Jankbot, do you guys actively look at that every year and reevaluate that if it has a place in the meta?
Nah, Jankbot's not on the shortlist for me. There's a lot of cards on the shortlist to look at. They don't get looked at very often right now because sets have been pretty sparse, but Jankbot will eventually find a spot. But the thing that Jankbot does is take a deck that already has a whole bunch of good cards and has trouble fitting them all, Gore Feast, and then makes them into a deck that beats your opponent by destroying them with a salty Jankbot.
Gorfies is still a deck that is the best fit for Jankbot, and Gorfies right now is really bad in the meta. There's just too many answers for it.
Yeah, and I mean, that is what happens with a lot of cards. Jankbot on 4 is great when half of the field isn't running Wintermoon and just either counters it or time ripples it and then time ripples it and then plays Windsinger and has more cards than you.
Or has vampires and Rockcast.
I actually think Jankbot's probably okay against... No, Rockcast doesn't count. Rockcast doesn't hit Jankbot. Jankbot's 4.
I'm talking about the rest of the deck.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah. Why Gorfies is not good in the meta? Not so much Jankbot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I was like, Jankbot swings into vampires for days.
Jankbot still needs a good deck around it because you can't rely on Jankbot.
There is a new collector's art Jankbot though, which is like a little jank raptor, and it's pretty cool.
Actually, when I first looked at that, it looked like the Slaughter Gear. Which one was that?
It kind of looks like a Reaver. It has a very similar. Like, the Reaver kind of looks like a Metal Gear Rex, and so does Jankbot, like a Metal Gear Raptor or something. Anyway.
So if you were prepping for the IQ, what decks would you be looking at right now?
Man, that's got to be so hard for the IQ players, because I honestly... if they have to play... Do they play a day of Constructed?
Yes, Constructed for 4 rounds and draft and Constructed top... 4?
Okay, so assume 12 players show up, right? That's 11 people who have... 6 of which who have actively won their spot through playing Constructed, and 6 of which who are wild cards could bring anything because they won their spot through Limited. and the meta is fairly open. Wintermoon is probably the strongest, most consistent mid-range deck in the game. It probably wins against every Blood Diamond deck. It probably wins against most even Diamond Wild decks. You know, as long as it gets a foothold in the game. Instantly loses, as far as most people are considered, to mono, like just straight Ruby aggro, or to Blood Sapphire Sun Soul Phoenix. It's just, it has places where it
Ruby
loses.
Ruby Sapphire.
Did I say Blood Sapphire?
Just making sure.
I was looking at the symbols for Blood and Sapphire next to Yggdrasil's deck, actually. But yeah, it's. What do you take there? You can't even look at your opponents for info, because I guarantee you, everybody is going to build a deck the day of. Like, Jadeem Jedi and the Dragonborn might be working on a deck right now to bring.
So,
but nobody's going to know it until they show up.
That's another interesting thing. Do you think with the Dragonborns having how many players in it? Two, three?
637.
I meant in the top 12.
Oh, not in the Dragonborn themselves. Do they have two players in the top?
Yeah, Salution sure. And Jadeem Jedi.
Would they be running the same deck or different decks?
I mean, if they're playing as a team, same deck. If they think the deck is going to win, that's the deck you go with. Because they don't need to win day one. They need to win... With you having to win, not be in the bottom four... Of the first day, right? That's how it works. The bottom four get eliminated.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe everyone just brings aggro and flips a coin, right? Or maybe everyone brings Sapphire Wild, but with the main deck geared towards dealing with. Like, maybe you bring main deck Carnosaur. You know, that Carnosaur makes a huge difference against aggro. Hard to tell.
So, interesting thing, you didn't bring up Mono Ruby. Mono Ruby used to be in the discussion, and kind of is.
No, I absolutely brought it up. It destroys Sapphire Wild. I made that point very specifically. Thank you for listening to my conversation. You're so rude.
Okay, fine.
Mono Ruby is very strong, still is very strong. Mono Ruby suffers from Urgnokitis, where the champion they want to run is Urgnok, and that jerk starts with 16 health. And starting with 16 health feels really bad. Whether or not it is bad is irrelevant, because it feels bad.
Feels Batman. Yeah, I generally concur to that. Mono Ruby has a couple great matchups, but it has a bunch of terrible matchups as well, and would be quite the interesting gamble.
But if it wins you one match... I think that saves your day.
You have
one.
To go 2-2 to get into day 2, assuming everyone shows up.
It still might be the one to go with.
I mean, if that's your goal, just to make it to day 2.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter what you place day 1. But the final day is also constructed. I doubt they have to bring the same deck
they do.
Day 3, though.
We looked this up recently.
Oh.
Wow, that kind of sucks.
That seems weird, but yeah.
Well, it makes it such that there's a lot more game playing for the last day if you have to like figure out, okay, they played this, where they're going to play instead, or what would be. It's just, if you're stuck with one deck, then you don't have to worry about deck registration or last-minute decisions or anything along those lines. You just make the choice for the deck once.
That's true.
What, you don't want two all-nighters?
Well, there's going to be all-nighters, but probably not for a deck construction.
Okay.
So you'll probably be part of those.
Yeah, so you two are part of what? Rated Hex? Hex Rated? What is it called now?
Yep.
And part of yep. your group is Neo.
Yes.
So would you guys be on Friday night deck testing with him, getting ready for Saturday?
I'm deck testing with him right now.
So I know a couple people will be out there with him to do that, like Wordle.
No, he's going to be getting plastered.
That's probably true as well, but I think Wordle will be testing for him on his behalf. Actually, that's going to happen up until the tournament actually starts. And then once it starts, they may do some testing just to figure out optimal reserve strategy along those lines, but you are somewhat limited after your deck. You've chosen your deck.
So this is actually, you bring up an interesting thing I want to touch on. Neo has a support organization. Jadeem Jedi and Salution has a support organization. Will during the tournament will they have coaching?
Like during the matches or in between matches?
In between matches.
No, I imagine they're going to be fully isolated, like for the event, like until the end of the day. From the sounds of it, it's actually just going to be a very quiet and dry event. I've even heard that the way the players have talked about it makes it sound like they won't be able to hear the casting, and as a result of that, like, the crowd won't be able to hear the casting. That might be a Twitch-only thing. And, if that's the case, then...
Rule 8A, players will use the constructed deck they previously used in Day 1 of the tournament.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's not even any need for coaching. Like, if somebody... the best coaching there's gonna get is, like, JJ does well Day 1, he comes off the stage, you know... Shakes Satolution's hand, they high five. Oh, good job, buddy, good job. Oh, I like that play where you did this thing. Haha, let's go get
Orla a drink. Will say to Neil, okay, when you get back into the ring, I want you to punch him when he's not looking.
That has been our game plan. Looking at Slack chat.
Mostly violence.
Mostly violence.
Extra game options.
Three people want to hit Will Wheaton for some reason.
Weren't you one of those people?
At you guys.
No. I think Will Wheaton's cool. I was one of those people that was not jealous of the picture about Felicia Day hanging out with some people from Slack.
Okay, but you guys are great card players, and part of your play groups
are
many
we?
Good card players. You guys will have more time and be able to look at the decks as they're being revealed. I assume that the deck lists, are they going to be completely public to the players? Like, how long before?
You might see something where, between day one and day three, Wordle tells Neo, oh, okay, if you play against this guy, make sure you side these in. But, it's not anything that Neo wouldn't have figured out on his own. There's not a whole lot there that group play extends into.
I mean, if they really want to... If there's advantage to that, of knowing what happened day one, you could go back and watch the stream to get that information if you were not part of a team.
Absolutely.
Did you have a follow-up to that, Fee?
Well, it's just like if you think about other esports or other sports, there's huge like groups of coaching that is very focused on, say, matchup or focused on positional play and things like that. And, I don't know, it's interesting if it's going to happen in a TCG card game like this. Like, in a physical game, there's some scouting that goes on, right?
Yep.
But in, like, a digital environment, something like this, you have what, possibly dozens of people looking at it and possibly able to help.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting environment.
I suppose. It's an environment. It's got its advantages and its disadvantages. Like, you're not able to, like, sneak into JJ's house and actually, like, pull apart his sleeves and find out what cards are in them.
Hmm.
Which was one of our original ideas.
Yeah, we have to go back to that plan.
Hmm. Your spy game is weak.
Well, spy is actually a card that might get some game, if you know what I mean.
I haven't seen Subterranean Spy in a while. One of the best cards in the game.
Yeah, boy.
Oh, yeah, we got to submit our applications for Dragonborn Penta. Unrelated note. That's anyways, right. So, shall we move to the draft pack? We shall.
Hold. Yes.
Let me bring up the draft pack. Yes.
The draft pack is, as our legendary, a bastard spawn of Bokrug. Our uncommons are Necropolis Tablet, Stinging Ambush, Rotcast, and Smirking Trickster. Our commons are Arcane Zephyr, Star-Touched Brave, Niblin Skirmisher, Nazik Webguard, Fiery Indignation, Mecha Philcape, Sunseer, Arcane Focus, First Blood, Incubate, Gem Soul Feeder, and Eggblight Afflictor.
Go ahead, Pinto, tell us what you pick.
Okay, so my first pick's probably... Okay, so if I'm playing this at home and I want to win, Bastard Spawn of Bokrug. If I'm playing this at the Invitational... Do I still take the Bastard Spawn? So the Bastard Spawn of Bokrug is a game-winning card, right? Like, this is a... four-drop double Sapphire Double Blood Threshold flying 1/3. And when it deals damage to an opposing champion, you bury half their deck. And it's in the right shards to get a bunch of spider eggs into their deck. And it basically says, if this connects, you win. But the requirements to playing it are so hard that I don't know if I would pick it. That said, it flies around almost all removal in the set. Perifigy, Skewer, and Meek hit it. And I think that's it. Another good flyer gets in its way, though.
Wait, Meek?
Now, that being said...
Pridesful.
No. Meek might not be in the set. Meek's not in the set, right. But Pridesful also doesn't hit it, so we're both wrong. That's good. So Skewer, Perifigy, like, double Vampire Kiss, I guess. A Madame Banana player is gonna get in front of this with some spirits. I think I still take it, because the shards that it represents are good. I don't have to get married to the card. And I specifically don't want to play against it in the follow-ups. The uncommons are uncommonly bad for what we normally open on this podcast. Rockcast is the only one that I would consider playable in 17-card packs. In 15-card packs, I certainly would have considered Smirking Trickster as a card. No longer do I think it finds its way in anywhere else. And in the commons, we've got a couple of weirdly bad ones. Nibbling Skirmisher is okay. Nozick Webguard's okay. Fiery Indignation is okay. Mechafilcape's good and finds its way into a lot of decks. These are all good cards, I guess. These are all I would take them but not first pick them kind of cards. Like Arcane Focus is here. A couple of things. If I'd already picked the Bastard Spawn and I got this pack, it would be a snap Eggblight Afflictor, though. Eggblight Afflictor is a great 2-drop.
Over the Webguard?
Yeah. Webguard is... Okay, so there's two types of spider decks. There's the aggressive spider deck that I personally love to play, and there's the I am going to just sit here until you draw eggs deck, which involves Webguard, which is also fun to play, but not... I don't know. If the Eggblade Afflictor wasn't here, I would probably go with the Nozick Webguard had I already taken the Bastard Spawn. But assuming I took a Chafe card in Pack 1, I probably look at Fiery Indignation and then Rockcast. So that would be my 1, 2, and 3. I might take Eggblade Afflictor over Rockcast. I don't really like Rockcast. So Bastard Spawn would be my first pick. Fiery Indignation would be my second pick. And Eggblight Afflictor be my third pick in this pack.
I'm just gonna say that Penta just failed his like Dragonborn application, I think.
Oh.
Because I left out Arcane Focus.
I think so.
High Overlord Jadeem Jedi would not let me in.
Definitely not. This is a difficult pack because it's more of whatever I pick and like passing the next guy over has a lot of choices. But I still think I agree with Penta. Bastard Spawn is probably going to be my pick. Just because like, if you get it up and running and you hit it, it's going to win you games. Second pick, Fire Indignation's not bad, but I usually don't like to go Ruby first. Just because like, Ruby Wild usually gets taken up at some point, so I'd rather have somebody else go that route. So I think I would actually take, as a second pick, Rotcast. And as a third pick, there's so many good things at third pick that I could probably take Arcane Focus or the Webguard or even the Skirmisher. But I think I'll have to take the Arcane Focus as third pick.
Okay. Why?
Because all the other common cards you're more likely to see those come up. So if you wanted to go into those colors, it's a lot easier, I think. As opposed to something...
Shards.
Yeah, sorry. Shards. Thresholds. Yeah, then Arcane Focus. Arcane Focus seems like a much easier pick, flex pick. And it finds its way into a lot more decks than, say, Variety, Fury, Indignation, or Webguard.
Hmm. Okay. My picks are not going to be too exciting. Then my first one is going to be the Bastard Spawn, partly because I like how deep
triple
this
kill
pack is in Blood, that I will hopefully get something that's playable coming back around. I don't think I'll get the Ache Blight Afflictor back, but I would be quite happy if I did, because that card...
People pass it all the
shouldn't
time. I would play a deck of
it's,
10.
It's highly pickable, but you also play Abominic. You personally do quite a bit, and that card is fantastic with it. But even without it, Ache Blight Afflictor is a card you want to die, so you are fine attacking with a 2-1 to their wall of 4/4s, because if they don't block, that's 2 free damage. If they do block, then it dies. And you're never blocking with the Ache Blight Afflictor because it can't, so it's like you just run it until it dies. I had a card like that once.
You know, the weirdest thing I've ever seen in a game is somebody playing an Ache Blight Afflictor, and then I put down a 1-3 or a 1-4, and they stop swinging with their Ache Blight Afflictor, and I'll play the whole match out and never see a reason. Like, they're not holding Abominate, they never play Abominate, they never have, like, a shift that makes it better. They just... They run into that, like, mindset where they're like, well, I can't just lose this troop.
Right. They probably think they want to do damage at some point when they're going to attack you with overwhelming force.
Yeah, like, oh, I'll just represent the backswing. You don't need to represent the backswing with Ache Blight Afflictor unless it's something like you're holding... Like, the enemy has two Wolvier Bashers and you have one Ache Blight Afflictor. Like, that is the only time I can think of where you don't, like, swing
in
with
Ache Blight Afflictor. Yeah, I think it's like 9 times out of 10 you should treat Ache Blight Afflictor just like...
99 out of 100.
Like a Savage Raider. Just... It has to attack. Just keep doing it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that leaves my... Or that creates my second pick, and I think I want to pick Rotcast here. It's tough, because I really like the Fiery Indignation as a pick as well. Rotcast is sufficient to get rid of a lot of early threats. And, I don't know, I normally avoid packs that are too deep in one shard, and I think that's somewhat to a fault. And here, I think some of my blood might come back. Maybe. I don't know, so Gem Soul Feeder probably... yeah, this pack is a little bit weak in some places. I may not get any blood back.
Gem Soul Feeder is such a good flex pick in this pack. It fits into every archetype that wants blood. Your Blood Diamond, you want Gem Soul Feeders. Your Blood Sapphire, you want Gem Soul Feeders. Your Blood Ruby, you want Gem Soul Feeders. Your Blood Blood, you want Gem Soul Feeders.
So yeah, I'm going to pick my Rotcast second, but I don't think that's a strong pick, just because I don't think I'm going to get much blood back. And then my third pick is going to be Fire Indignation. And what? It's probably because it's the removal here. The other ones that are really competing for my third pick are going to be the Ache Blight Afflictor. I think that's a fantastic one. The Gem Soul Feeder.
No.
And the Niblin Skirmisher.
I demand you both tell me what that does.
What's that?
What do you use that Rotcast on?
Stuff that dies.
But no, like... Okay. That's fine. I won't delve too deeply into the processes of your mind, but it feels so bad every time I have it. You never get to play it on two because it's double threshold, and you get to destroy targeted opposing troop with what is it, cost three or less. I guess that gets Gem Soul Feeders and it gets switched. Okay,
there's a lot of
there's
a lot of good three drops, and there's a lot of threatening two drops that you wouldn't mind using it on.
There's not many three drops that I'm happy going 1-1 with when I'm playing Blood, because I could usually just be playing something that's, I don't know, maybe it's the Abominate in me, where there's not enough of removal in this format for me to think that my removal is going to allow me to control the board. So Rotcast always feels like a band-aid.
So, not looking at rares, the targets that you are probably okay hitting include Basher, Atir, maybe Eremite, Sylvan Performer, Skydancer, maybe, depending on whether or not they have other ramp. If they do, then probably not. If they...
Runeweb, Infiltrator, I suppose.
Yes, Relic of Nul'Zan.
I'm not saying there's
like
no...
Relic is a huge one.
Yeah, Relic of Nul'Zan is a huge one. Right?
Pyrosol Summoner. That guy's annoying.
That
Pain
guy's
Breeder.
Really annoying.
Skirmisher, maybe, depending on where you are in the match. Grim Harvester.
Yeah. Sure, yeah, no, sure. I mean, there's great
maybe
targets
Invoker,
for it.
Depending on if they have the resources open or not, if they're playing it poorly. Dream Smoke Mystic. Certainly a high-value target. Chimera Guard Fallen, again, depending on their shard state. Ashwood Blade Master.
My thing about Rotcast is I usually get one or two without fighting for them. So picking them early always feel like, I don't know. It's the same as looking at the Mecha Philcape in this pack. The Mecha Philcape is one of the best cards in the entire format. Like, you always want one in your reserves because it deals with so many shenanigans. Like, oh, you abominated? Boom. No, doesn't matter. You just lost a troop. But you never have to... I mean, it's a common versus an uncommon here, but you're never fighting for a Mecha Philcape. Everybody's got one. Everybody at the table has 1.5 Mecha Philcapes. So, I don't know. I always felt that way about Rotcast. Maybe it's not the case.
Yeah, I have not had a similar experience with that.
Yeah, I only have maybe one or two drafts that I see Rotcast round too often.
I understand it's limited, but I also... I'm pretty sure if I take the Afflictor or the Feeder over it, then the person to my left is certainly taking that as a high priority pick. I could be wrong, but if they do, then that's going to hurt me in pack two. While if I pass Afflictor, as Jerry mentioned, that tends to go around, it's probably not going to be a reason for someone to go Blood. Peter might be, but I think it's still going to be a couple seats away from me because there's other things that are slightly more interesting in the pack. Maybe. Depends on people's flavors, I guess. But I think that wraps us up for now. So, Technofee, your final thoughts for tonight?
Very excited about the 100K. Can't wait for it.
And you're going, right?
Yes, I will be there in person.
So people can go meet you in person. Or as your people say, in robot.
In,
Beep boop 1110110001111.
Okay, sure, why not? If they can find me.
Penta, your final thoughts.
Hold it now and watch the hoodwink as I make you stop think. You'll think you're looking at Aquaman. I summon fish to the dish, although I like the chalet swish. I like the sushi because it's never touched a frying pan. Ah.
My name is Michael Allen, known as Zubrin in most places, and Zubrin_Alpha on Twitch and Twitter. Nicholas Podrasky is Pentachills everywhere, especially on Twitch, where you can find him streaming almost nearly daily at this point, but also on the HexTCG main channel on Fridays, which is merely minutes before we start recording this podcast. Technofee is Technofee in all places. He's most famous for his voice saying it is the end of round during the Shard Cup tournament. Ugh. And also, randomly populated in various places that he does not know about, where his voice just randomly plays.
Yeah, deep dark corners of the internet, got it.
The sound engineer for this episode is likely Elysian, who does fantastic work for us, and we're always happy to have him be able to put this podcast together, because it makes the show better. For any updates on our streaming, when we post a show or other happenings in the Hex community, follow us on Twitter at 2turnsahead, or leave a comment on the show's post at 2turnsahead.com, or email us at 2turnsahead@gmail.com. Of course, if this show gets posted to Reddit, as some of our listeners do occasionally, and make long comments, we also appreciate that, and we'll see them, talk about them. Finally, if you want automatic updates, please subscribe to us on iTunes. If you feel inclined, give us a positive rating on the iTunes store. Of course, when I say we talk about the comments, I'm not talking about we talk about the commenters. We're talking about the comments that you add to the podcast. I mean, we may talk about you as well, but it's most likely what you said.
Did you see that person who posted that comment?
Rating the podcast will give other listeners a better chance of discovering the podcast on iTunes and help us grow the Hex community. Thank you for listening.
And stay lucky.
My name is Tiffy.
Hot like wasabi when I bust rhymes, big like Leanne rhymes, because I'm all about value.
Don't make me make an internet crawler looking for that WAV file.
Bert Camphor's got the mad hits, you try to match wits, you try to hold it, hold me but I bust her. Dang, it's line. Gonna make a break and take a fake. I'd like a stinking aching shake. I like vanilla, it's the finest of the flavors. Gotta see the show cause then you'll know the vertigo is gonna grow. It's so dangerous, you'll have to sign a waiver. Yeah, I listened to a lot of Bare Naked Ladies back in the day. I'm pretty like sure yesterday. I could do that song from... No, actually, it's... It's been a while now, actually. I'm going to go and listen to it after a while. But I do know that in the second rap, air quotes, breakdown of that song... is it the second one? Yeah. In the second breakdown is the best lyrical genius that ever has been, because it starts off with Chickadee China, the Chinese chicken. That's just the line. And then my absolute favorite thing in the entire world, where it goes, gotta get in tune with Sailor Moon because that cartoon's got the boom anime babes, that make me think the wrong thing.
Makes you think the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's the line, man.
That's the line.
That's the line.
Not gonna argue with the line, but wow.
Also, the Bare Naked Ladies have a song about a bank heist, which is amazing. Because when they get there, the bank's full of nuns, and they don't pull off the bank heist because the bank was full of nuns.
So, and their band name doesn't make you think about the wrong things to begin with?
What? Oh, okay. No. Their band name just makes me think that they named themselves that to get attention.
Okay.
Because the literal very... Like, I looked at that in Walmart when I was, like, very young, and I was like, why did they call themselves the Bare Naked Ladies? And my mom was like, to make people ask that question. And I was like, oh,